From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
Oh, the Beatles sang about it. It wasn't really revolution. We're talking constitutional convention. But some people think it's revolution. And if you want to change the world, you're going to have a chance to do that in 2017. Now, our connection this hour goes back to April 4th, 1967 in Albany, the last time our state held a constitutional convention. Now, 186 delegates attended that convention. They considered a menu of proposed changes, an expansion of individual citizen rights, a repeal of the 19th century James Blaine Amendment, which prohibited the state from funding parochial schools, allowing the legislature to incur debt without referendum, and more. Voters eventually had their say. November 7th, 1967, and all proposals from that constitutional convention were rejected. That was it. In the 1990s, journalist and former hostage Terry Anderson, you probably know that name, well, he led a public campaign for major reforms in a constitutional convention. Despite his efforts, New York voters resisted the call for a new constitutional convention in 1997. Well, do we need one this time around? The next opportunity is 2017. What could it address? How would it work? What's the purpose? Tonight, a public forum will address those questions, the myths, the reality, and more. But first, the participants are here on Connections, taking my questions and yours this hour. My guests include Brian Kolb, Assemblyman in the 131st District, the Assembly Minority Leader, and it's nice to see you in studio, Brian.
Always a pleasure, Evan.
All right. Also here is Peter Galley, who's a Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Canisius College. Peter, nice to see you.
Thank you. Well, good to be here.
Judy Weinstein is here from the League of Women Voters, Rochester Metro Area. Hello, Judy.
Hi, good to be here.
And Becky Elwell is here, the president of the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester. Becky, nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Are we going to do this, Brian, 2017?
I sure hope so, Evan. obviously, there's a lot of time yet to take place, and it's really going to be up to the voters to decide, obviously, in 2017. But certainly, I think any poll that you are still looking at today, that most people think that New York State's on the wrong track. And it doesn't matter where you live. And I think it's about a very cumbersome legislative process that we have, how legislators or the redistricting process, which is gamed for whoever's in the majority in both houses, backdoor borrowing. There's so many different things. We could take up term limits, initiative and referendum. There's so many possibilities that could possibly exist, obviously. But certainly it's going to be people deciding that they want to do this, but historically, those that really like the status quo are the ones that work hardest against it.
You are talking about term limits with some enthusiasm, it sounded like, even if that cost you a job?
Absolutely. I've actually introduced legislation separate from the Constitutional Convention to do that, as well as we have legislation that establishes term limits for legislative leaders, being yours truly as well. And also committee chairs in both houses of the legislature, so you can't, it would allow so that you don't have a permanent person in a position for a long period of time, and that's where you get that embedded power and really, quite frankly, a lack of creative thinking in terms of what we're doing in New York.
Listeners, if you've got questions about the Constitutional Convention process and what it would entail, we'll take your questions this hour. Some of them already come in online. It's at Evan Dawson on Twitter. You can email the program or you can call toll-free 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Peter, history says, despite what Brian says, with some optimism, we're probably not going to do this. Is that right?
In the last 50 years, not just in New York, but around the country, there has been a significant drop-off in the number of conventions that have been called by the voters. And it's a question that we're, as researchers, thinking about right now. Why is that the case? What's going on here with the convention? But I must tell you, I think that this time, unlike 1997, there's a consortium of groups, Rockefeller Institute, League of Women Voters statewide, the Albany Law School.
And as Brian says, this isn't really partisan right-left.
No, these are not partisan groups. The New York State Bar Association, we've kind of come together not to take a position on the issue, but to move the needle. In 2015, the Siena Research Institute did a poll asking people if they were familiar with this vote that was going to be taking place or about the Constitution. 95% 95% had no idea. We need to move that needle if we want at least an informed vote. And these groups that have banded together now are attempting not to persuade the voters to vote for the convention, but to give them the kind of information that will make that decision an informed one.
Listeners, your host is probably just about as ignorant as you are. I've dug into some of the history and the background in some of these conventions, but I've got a lot to learn this hour. And let me ask the people who've helped organize the event tonight why they wanted to choose this particular topic. The event tonight, 7 p.m. at Asbury First United Methodist Church. It's called Nuts, Bolts, and Monkey Wrenches of a New York State Constitutional Convention. Again, it starts at 7. It's free to the public, Asbury First United Methodist Church. And Becky and Judy, why this, why now? I'll start with Judy.
Well, the League of Women Voters always likes to inform the public on important issues, and certainly a constitutional convention is an important event for New York State. The, as you mentioned, the election will be taking place in 2 years, and it's going to take time to get people familiar with the concept of what is in the state constitution and what a convention would do, the whole process between that vote in 2017 until amendments are put to the voters. So we're starting that now.
Okay. Becky?
Well, we're an advocacy group, and we're also an education group. And so we find it important to reach out to the community to let them know what's going on in government, what needs to be done. And so this sets up just a special time for us to help in the educating of people with the Constitutional Convention, how it goes about and what might happen.
We have a couple of comments and questions already online. And Mark writes to say, Evan, I hate to say kids these days, but it's kids these days. That's why there hasn't been a constitutional convention in 50 years. Voter apathy. Peter?
Of course, there's something to that. Let me give you a startling figure. I can't remember the exact numbers, but I will tell you, in 1967, when we had the vote for a convention, there were roughly 100 or 200,000 more that voted for it. That was about a million, say, two. And there maybe have been a million against it. But there were 2,900,000 that didn't vote at all on that proposition. The startling figure in constitutional conventions in New York is that figure of non-participants. They went to the polls, but they simply didn't bother with the proposition. That's the group we need to affect.
Okay. Brian Kolb, what do you say to Mark's comment about voter apathy?
Well, I think that's an accurate statement in general, certainly because I think people feel very disenfranchised. Whether it's Washington or New York State government, oh, it's the same old, same old. But I think what's different between now and 1997 and actually going back to 1967 is social media. And certainly getting beyond the communication barriers that were in existence back then have totally changed. There's such an easy way now to educate voters, to provide links to information, to websites, whatever it might be, and that's something that did not exist before. And I think that really, you won't have to wait for the conventional newspaper or radio or television station to carry information about it. Yep. And I think that's going to be a huge advantage.
If you've got questions on specific issues, I already see Emmy and Sam with questions on specific issues that might be covered in a constitutional convention. We will get there, certainly. Well, I want to talk process first, just to kind of walk us through a timeline. And by the way, Brian Kolb, who in state government doesn't want a constitutional convention?
Well, that's a great question, because no one publicly comes out to say
that's
I'm against
right.
it.
But really, behind closed doors.
Anyone that wants to keep the system exactly the way it is, and I think it would be fair to say the two majorities in both houses of the legislature, the judiciary would be my guess that they don't want any changes that would affect them. The interesting thing about Governor Cuomo, he's currently our governor, he had put out a policy book when he first ran, and in that policy book he said he thought we should have a constitutional convention. His father, Mario Cuomo, felt that we should have a constitutional convention. So I think, again, people that like the way it is now, where power is centralized and only a few people get to really direct state government, those are the people that don't want to change anything.
Power protects power.
Correct.
Okay. Well, so let's talk process. And to some of what you're hearing from Peter and Brian, just about what voters know or don't know about this. You know, I go back to our own archives, WXXI, particularly WXXI-TV. We did a good amount of reporting back in the 1990s when this question was coming up. And no, we didn't have a constitutional convention in 1997, but we did a lot of polling. We got involved in a number of ways. And just reading back through the archives, when the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle applied public journalism techniques to a 1997 statewide referendum on whether to hold a constitutional convention, the results were palpable. In the six-county area covered by the newspaper and its broadcast partner, that's us, WXXI, 82% of those who voted in the general election also voted on the Constitution referendum. This compares with 71% in the remainder of upstate New York and only 36% in New York City. In other words, people who were aware of it and knew about it were willing to take a position one way or another, and a lot of people otherwise just sat out. They didn't know. They weren't educated. So I think Brian and Peter are right. That's what we're doing. That's what the League is doing. It's what the Interfaith Alliance is doing. Whether you know your position is for or against the Constitutional Convention, it's good to know the process. So let's walk through the process, Peter. What's going to happen between now and 2017? What would it take to get there to put this thing together?
Well, the first step would be the general election in November of 2017, when the ballot question will be rated here, because it has to be precisely stated. It's in the Constitution. Shall there be a convention to revise the Constitution and amend the same? That's the exact wording of the provision. If a majority of voters voting on the proposition say yes, then the next step would be for generally, they're not required, but the legislature or the governor or both will set up preparatory commissions to help with the convention. The following year, general election, delegates will be selected. 3 from each Senate district and 15 at large. The total this year, that would make it about 204 delegates, I believe. The legislature then would enact rules governing the delegate selection processes. And here's where many of the reforms that Brian Kolb has recommended that the legislature do, the procedures and principles. For example, they could say, we're just going to use the standard election law. Or they could say, we're going to have nonpartisan elections. They could do a number of different things. And this is where I think the public has to get involved. In any case, the convention then would convene in April of 2019.
2019.
And it would then proceed. Usually the Constitution does not specify an end date, but usually the conventions finish their work that year, with one exception, 1867, and then not less than 6 weeks, the Constitution says, the voters will receive the proposition to vote yes or no on it. What's interesting here is that we have 3 steps in this process where the people make the decision whether we want to have a convention, who the delegates will be, and whether we want to accept the results. That is unheard of at the national level. Our process is participatory and majoritarian.
Okay. I go back, though, to 1967, the last one of these. And this is where the historians in the room need to tell me if I'm wrong. But my understanding is there were, 7 or 8 or 9 things that the voters ended up voting on down the list, that the convention starts in April, they wrap up in November, and then they give voters the chance to decide, but they packaged everything together. It was an up-down on the whole package. And if there's a 2019 constitutional convention, and I am absolutely in favor of, say, term limits, but there are certain other things that come up that I'm not as comfortable with, shouldn't I be able to vote individually on them? Brian, you're nodding over there. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. And I think really that's up to the convention to decide. You know, the state constitution is about 45 pages long. And there's different articles within the state constitution. And I think if you're going to change a specific topic within a specific article, then that would make sense that you're going to vote yes or no to change, let's say, Article 4, which is the executive branch. You know, there's Bill of Rights, there's suffrage, there's the legislature. So, again, I think when you start to compartmentalize the votes, it'll be easier for the voter. And anything that's going to change within that article is what the voter would say yes or no to. And then, again, I think what happens with the delegates is they're going to decide what are the most important things that they believe needs to be changed or modified to present to the voters.
Okay, so if you had 3, Brian, what are your top 3 that you would love to see on a constitutional convention?
Well, first I would start with the electoral process, which is redistricting, term limits, initiative and referendum as topics of consideration when you talk about the electoral process. When you look at the financial end of the world, I think it's certainly we'd have to look at how much debt that should be incurred or not be able to incur through backdoor borrowing. In other words, any long-term debt, should that be approved by the voters through a referendum versus the legislature being able to borrow money through the backdoor state agency process. So those are a couple things that are talked about a lot, at least in terms of as I've traveled around. And people are, I mean, you could really, I can see the list being narrowed very easily, mm-hmm. focusing on what people are most concerned about in terms of how state government affects their lives.
Becky and Judy, are there any issues that stand out to you that you would take any position on whether they should or shouldn't be on this kind of a vote, a ballot for the Constitutional Convention?
At this point, the League doesn't even have a position on whether there should be a Constitutional Convention. So
your position is educate the public and give them a chance to make an educated decision.
Exactly.
Okay. Becky?
In our talk within the board, we've mentioned redistricting so that we would have greater representation in terms of who gets elected and selected to be elected.
Okay.
That's the main topic.
Okay. Peter, then before I get to the phones here, just to make sure we're clear on process, whatever ends up on that menu for voters would be decided by the delegates?
That's correct.
Okay.
The crucial decision here, I think the 67th convention made a mistake. The 1938 convention did not make the same mistake, and I think we won't make the same mistake again. Here's what 38 did. All of the changes that they made that were relatively uncontroversial, they put in one omnibus proposition, Proposition 1. There were 51 changes. They put it on the ballot as one. And then they
But you're saying they were kind of slam dunks.
They were, yeah, the ones okay. that weren't contentious. Then they took 9 other issues where they were particularly contentious, and they put them as separate propositions. And you know, one of the things that gives me some faith again in the public, the 3 most partisan of those 9 were rejected and the other 6 were accepted. That's what needs to happen this time, I believe. And furthermore, we need to stay away from these contentious policy issues. We should not be getting into the question, we want to get rid of the welfare provisions, we want to get rid of the forever wild. Those issues are only issues that will end up tying the convention up. There are significant, Brian has mentioned them, debt, the legislature, local government, the selection of delegates. I'm a little nervous about saying this in front of Brian, but you know, the heart of the problem, it seems to me, is the legislature. If you look at it, it is not
functioning. I don't think he's disagreeing, actually.
Well, he may not be, but look, we need a dedicated legislature. What does that mean? A full-time one with very little or no outside income. We need campaign financing reform. We need term limits.
Now you guys are going to fight.
Term limits on leaders, if not on members. Term limits, and we need a strong code of ethics and a redistricting committee. If you put those 4 things together, I think we will restore trust in the legislature. The legislature isn't going to do it, but a convention could. Not would, but could.
Okay. Then, Brian, I'm not going to hit those one by one. We'll work through plenty with you this hour, but full-time legislature, yes or no?
Right now, I would say no. And the reason being is that I think that there's a tremendous opportunity for a lot of people to bring different talents to the legislature. And right now, I think more of the problem is with how legislators' districts are drawn to, shall we say, minimize competition. So, for instance, if in the assembly, if we had a truly what I would call nonpartisan redistricting process, just right now today, there would be 6 to 8 more Republican legislators in the state assembly. But the way they design the districts prevents any competition. And my point being is if we had more competitive races, then I think there's going to be less of a concern whether you have a full-time or part-time legislature. And also it really depends on where you live. If you're in upstate or from upstate and you see a state legislator that currently earns $79,500, and you're now going to make a proposal to make it full-time, and now they're going to be paid $125,000, $130,000, maybe $150,000, the people in upstate are going to say, what are you, crazy? I don't make that kind of money you know, and I have to work every single day. So there's pitfalls with the arguments, which is the beauty of actually having the convention. So there's a lot of pros and cons. Doesn't mean we shouldn't discuss them or present them as alternative, but certainly I think that's where you have to, you know, measure it.
And you gentlemen have lit up the phones now, so last question before we turn to the phones. Peter, let me play devil's advocate on the question of term limits then. If you want a full-time legislature, does that clash with term limits? In other words, let's say I'm pick any job in the world, but I'm going to go and I'm going to run for the state legislature, and I'm elected, and I've got two terms to serve. Pick it, whatever it is. 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, however we want to define a term limit. But then I've got to go back to my career, and if I have to abandon that, does that narrow the pool of people who would run for office, knowing that you have to quit your career if you are in the legislature?
Well, that's why when I said term limits, if you notice, I said term limits on leaders.
On leaders, okay.
We have that classic
leadership positions. Like Brian's positions here, by the way. Yeah.
Well, but I mean is that the kind of power, especially in the assembly, that leaders have been, pretty much the legislators have abdicated this power, but they exercise a kind of power over them that I don't think is healthy. If you said, look, you got 6 years and somebody else takes it, that would change the dynamics, say, of the assembly. I don't know about the Senate at this point. And you might not need term limits, but something that provides more circulation in those bodies is necessary. And there have been a number of things put on the table today by Brian and I. They're the kind of things a convention should debate.
I think everyone on this panel agrees that giving people more information and letting them make a decision is better, even if not everyone agrees with every decision. Let me bring in an avid listener of the program and a gentleman who's been a guest on this program and one of Brian's colleagues. It's Mark Johns. Mark, how are you?
Hey, Evan. Brian, how's everybody doing?
Good, Mark.
I just wanted to bring up one point.
Oh, go ahead.
Probably up against the break. But, you know, I sponsored a bill for legislative equality. And basically, we've let, you know, the leadership, especially in the assembly where it's 2-1, you don't really have any power if you're in the majority. You do what you're told. You vote yes for every bill that comes to the floor. But if we would start bringing up bills, keep in mind that 90% of the bills we author down there never come up for a vote. If we would be allowed to bring up bills or put things on the ballot, we did with the paperless legislature. Remember that? We got people voted on that. We let the gambling casino bill come up. That was actually an amendment to the Constitution. So there's no reason why we got to wait till 2017 or 2019. If the people in the People's House or the People's Party doing the people's business want to put up something like term limits, which is the most popular idea in this country, much less New York State, we could put it on the ballot and let the people vote for it, and it would get 90% approval. But when you put it in a constitutional convention, in that context with a bunch of other stuff, people are going to find poison pills in it. And as you said before, you put it out there in one big lump,
yeah,
and someone's going to find something distasteful in that lump. But if you put out term limits on its own, or getting rid of gerrymandered districts, independent redistricting, you know, Liz Benjamin's father, you all know who she is, mm-hmm, that Gerald Benjamin said we could redistrict next year if we wanted to. So where's the majority on that? Why don't they say, hey, look, let's go out and have this. We passed a redistricting reform bill, supposedly. You know what? Let's test drive that car. Let's go out and redistrict next year, the Assembly and the Senate, and let's see how things fall out.
All right, so Assemblyman John, stay on the line with us because I want to hit a couple of points here. First of all, Brian Kolb, you hear your colleague saying, hey, you could put term limits on a bill. You don't need a constitutional convention. It would pass overwhelmingly. Is he right about that?
No, he's not. And the reason being is that the current status quo will not take up these bills. There are already bills in existence for term limits, initiative and referendum, term limits for leaders, term limits for committee chairs. Those bills already exist. So there is no appetite for either House and either majority to take up the bills that are already there. So we already have the ability to make these changes through rank and file legislation. Certainly, even Mark's got a bill that basically says you got to allow every single legislator one bill to bring out for an up and down vote
every year. At least one bill, because as Mark has said on this program and many places elsewhere, if you're a minority legislator, good luck getting any bill to the floor.
Right, and Mark's idea is great. Having said that, it's not going anywhere because the status quo doesn't want it to go anyplace. And that's the whole point of having a convention, is to try to shake these things up in terms of trying to get some things out there for the voters to decide, rather than waiting on the incumbent legislature to actually act.
Assemblyman Johns, go ahead.
No, I agree with Brian. He's absolutely right. I'm saying that theoretically we could put something on the ballot and let them vote on it. But the majority of, you know, the Democrat majority in the House of Representatives, which is our assembly, is never going to allow that. But I listen to a lot of rhetoric down in Albany. You know, we're the people, party of the people, we're the house closest to the people, we do the people's business. Well, what I'm saying is there's a lot of things that people would like to see. Getting rid of gerrymandered districts, campaign finance reform, and most importantly, at least people believe this, term limits. So I'm saying that, of course, it's never going to come up. Brian's right. But, you know, you have to punish people at the voting booth in order to change that.
Yeah.
But the reality is, yes, it's not going to come up. But conceivably, yes, legally it could come up. Unfortunately, we have a system where, you know, if you're in the majority and you have this type of power, or they claim to, why is this, you know, why is the state 100,000 people leaving Western and upstate New York every year? I mean, do the Democrats in the Assembly take credit for that?
Assemblyman Johns, I think that you and Brian are probably very close on this, in that, you know, it's just pragmatically not going to happen without a convention. I think that's some of what we're hearing. Let's, Mark, you know what we need to do? You and I haven't talked enough lately about this idea on one bill, 1 year. We should do this every year until it passes. You got to come back on this program.
Well, Robin, I look forward to seeing you. And Brian and everybody on the panel, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Mark. That's Assemblyman Mark Johns, and he does. He's got a proposal, and it must be very. It's got to be frustrating to be a minority legislator in the state, Brian Kolb. Yes,
it has its moments. having said that, we talk about this all the time, and I've had people come up to me any number of occasions and say, you know, why are you doing this? And quite frankly, we do provide a voice. And in fact, I was telling a couple people the other day, I said, we have stellar debates on legislation every day when we're in session. And the Assembly Minority Conference, Republican Conference, in my opinion, are the best debaters in Albany out of both parties, both houses, because we do our homework, we do our research, and we debate on the merits, not on political parties, but on the merits. And it's unfortunate that the folks at home really don't get an opportunity to see democracy in action. And even on the committees, which we've been pushing for the committee deliberations to be televised or streamed, because people would be shocked to see the lack of democracy at the committee level, and also the lack of democracy on the floor of the state legislature. And that's exactly where you get a little frustrated from the standpoint of, you know, it can be better. It's not about having it the Republican way, none whatsoever. And that's another thing that we've done, is that we've really said we want to debate the merits on public policy. We're not here to talk about partisan politics. And that's exactly what our debates do. We do amendments. We do budget amendments. We have better ideas. We support certain things, and we'll vote for certain things. But if we think there's a better way, we continually to push that. And in fact, what's always interesting is that, you know, a number of the initiatives that Governor Cuomo has taken credit for were policy initiatives that came from the Assembly Republican Conference. But nobody knows that. And a wise old man told me a long time ago, it's about getting it done. It's not about who gets credit. So
eventually you probably would like a little.
Well, sure. But of course, anybody would, to be say, hey, great job. But that's one of those things you have to let go, is that it's important about trying to push others to do the right thing. And then if you don't get credit, you don't get credit. You just have to accept that.
All right. Before we get our break in, if you're just joining us, as we talk about the Constitutional Convention process, and we will come back to the phones if you're waiting. Peter, again, what's the language that's going to be up for voters in November of 2017?
The proposition that appears on the ballot will read as follows. Shall there be a convention to revise the Constitution and amend the same?
That's it. That's all it will say. And maybe I'm wrong here, but my instinct is, in this country, our Constitution, our federal Constitution, is understandably cherished. on the state level, I just don't believe that it's going to be viewed the same way. I doubt people see that on a ballot and think, oh, we can't touch the state constitution. It's a beautiful document, et cetera. I would think that if people understood it, they'd say, well, sure, let's consider what needs to change. But historically, they just haven't.
Here's my solution to that. If we could get every legislator, every bureaucrat, every public official, all the members of the public interest groups, the lawyers, everyone involved in any way with politics to sit down and read the Constitution, it would be like taking castor oil. You'd have to do it a little bit at a time. But I can tell you this, after they finish, if they finish, they would say, what in the hell is that? Where did we get this? What's that doing in there? It would be first, it would be a revelation, it would be shock, it would be bemusement, it would be embarrassment, and it would be anger. I think nothing more than that would do it to turn this thing around.
You're hearing
it's a bloated behemoth.
You're hearing Peter Galley, a professor emeritus of political science, Canisius College, and Brian Kolb, who is the Assembly Minority Leader. They will be leading the panel tonight in the public forum that is being hosted by the League of Women Voters of the Rochester metro area and the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester. The event tonight, it's a public forum, 7 p.m. at Asbury First United Methodist Church. It's called Nuts, Bolts, and Monkey Wrenches of a New York State Constitutional Convention, looking at some of the history that we've been wading into, and then talking about what comes next. When we come back here, we're going to get back to the phones, and we'll also answer some of your questions that have been coming in about specific issues that might or might not be considered if the voters approve a constitutional convention in November of 2017. That's next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, understanding the jury process. We'll talk to a juror from the recent Tan trial. Did that jury feel pressured by the judge to produce a result even when they felt clearly deadlocked? Then in our second hour, we talk to a man who survived a jump off the Golden State Bridge. He tried to commit suicide, he lived, and he is telling his story. It's all Tuesday on Connections.
California is used to extremes. In the middle of a drought, experts predict a wet winter. Flood control projects need to be ready.
100 years ago, they thought it would last 100 years, and here it is still standing and working today, but we have different needs of it today.
California prepares for El Nino, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A lot of listener questions coming in about the Constitutional Convention and the process. A couple of sent emails just asking if we say no in November of 2017, when's our next chance? Peter?
Next 20 years. 2037. Yeah. I will not be on this earth. I'll be very sad not to be a part of it.
Well, in other words, for Peter's sake, he's saying, you know, you might, yes, want to really think about this. November 2017 is your next chance. And again, every 20 years. Dan writes to us. Let's see here. Nope, this is Jake. Let me get Jake's comment. Jake says, I'm sure there are many issues you could bring up here, but you really got my attention with term limits. The legislature is nearly useless, and there are other things that could end up for grabs, such as outside income of legislatures. Of all things, getting some sanity back in the election process to get our leaders working for us again instead of for outside money would get me mobilized to vote yes on this. That is for sure. So, Jake, I don't think you're talking specifically to Brian Kolb when you say, I think he's talking on behalf of the entire legislature. He feels it's somewhat useless. Brian, you've heard that before. What would you say to Jake?
Well, in some cases, it is. Certainly, I think the toughest part for most people is to differentiate. What I would say, there are some very good people that serve in the legislature that really care, and they're trying to do the right thing every single day. And certainly, when you look at how the legislature doesn't work at different times, people throw everybody in the same tub of water, which is understandable, always painting the wide brush. But it's not true, but the people are looking at outcomes. And I think when you look at outcomes, we're not doing, as a body, aren't doing more than what we're already doing. We're not doing enough to make the state better. And whether it's, you know, unfunded mandates that affect local governments and school districts, and that comes out of the local taxpayer pocketbook. When you look at anything from the amount of debt that we've accumulated over the years, when you really look at the issues that affect people in their daily lives, the amount of taxes that they pay at the gasoline pump, the amount of taxes they pay on their utility bill, certainly I think that's where people start really feeling the disconnect, Evan, is when it, how does this affect my life? And if the state legislature and the governor aren't doing enough to make my life better, then they definitely feel disconnected, and I would agree with that.
Sam, an email from Sam. He writes, hi, Evan. I live in Monroe County. I do a lot of work in the Southern Tier, and this is a big idea here. He says, I'm telling you, plenty of people were serious about the idea of upstate secession. They want their own state. They blame New York City for everything. Well, New York City and Albany, Cuomo mostly. I'm just curious as to whether a constitutional convention could be a Trojan horse for upstate secession. Peter, I've not heard that. Have you?
It's hard to respond to that. As far as I'm concerned, that's an issue guaranteed to get people angry and excited, but it will derail everything we want to do.
It would not be serious.
I think it would destroy a convention. It would not succeed at the convention, and if there were enough people there who voted for that, which I don't think there will be, it would be a disaster. But it's a mistake to deal with our problems by thinking somehow. I mean, it was at one point Barry Goldwater was claimed to, you know, saw off part of New York so it would go out to sea and they wouldn't be part of New York. I mean, this idea that somehow we're so different and so antagonistic that we have to separate is a very disturbing idea to me.
All right, but Brian Kolb's district has plenty of people who think that they feel like New York City is a foreign country, and you've heard it from some of your constituents. What do you think of the idea, Brian?
Well, I think bottom line is you got to look at the root cause of why people want that secession movement and to separate from New York City. It's because right now our state legislature is dominated by New York City legislators. And where they've lost their minds, quite frankly, is that they have forgotten in terms of public policy that there are other people in this state with different values, different principles, different issues to resolve than that are not New York City centered. And then when you get into the financial picture, you know, certainly back when New York City went bankrupt back in the 1970s, back then, upstate bailed out New York City. But there are statistical studies done right now that if there was some sort of separation geographically, that the financial end might not be palatable for upstate areas. My view is you're trying to put a Band-Aid on things that can actually be fixed without going through any secession process. And I've always said this, is that we've got too many cookie-cutter public policies. In other words, the same policy for the entire state. So, for instance, if New York City wants to have this huge expanded Medicaid program in New York City because that's what their constituents want, great. Just don't mandate it for the rest of the state. Let there be more local decision-making, more local options, less cookie cutter, which will provide, I think, a lot of financial relief and policy relief that people are really looking for.
Yeah, I just jump in on that because
go ahead, Peter.
There is precedent for this. The Constitution explicitly recognizes the special status of New York City, and a number of provisions allow things to happen in New York City that do not happen elsewhere with regard to the judiciary, with regard to debt, and a whole range of things. So the Constitution already recognizes that there's a special character to New York City, and all Brian, I think, is suggesting is there are ways in which we can extend that without tearing the state apart.
Okay. A couple of listeners, Emmy is one on this subject. Emmy writes, do your panelists believe a constitutional convention will lead to cuts in retirement benefits for existing and future public employees? Barry writes to us and says, which state workers have their pensions guaranteed by the New York State Constitution? Why would any of these workers put their earned and contributed to pensions at jeopardy? Why would any of these workers trust the state, which connives to come up with any source of money, with the dollars in their funds? So sort of similar questions there. Brian Kolb, you want to tackle that in some way there?
Well, that question is precisely what people want to play on, is the fear. Now, there might be some people that say, hey, I think we should do something about pensions. I get that. But it also, to Peter's point, that could be one of the most controversial things that, if you will, mucks up the worst. Works. Currently, the state constitution protects the obligation to pensions. And that's what people are saying. Well, I'm not going to vote for the convention because they're going to take my pension away. Well, first of all, the convention has to decide that that's an issue. And second of all, the voters have to approve it, yay or nay, on the ballot. So there's plenty of voter participation on these issues. But to Peter's point, you know, you're going to have to really look at a priority in terms of what are the issues you want to tackle with the convention. And maybe the more contentious issues may not be the ones that you want to deal with through the convention process.
Okay. Peter, what do you think?
My own view is that there are fundamental structural, procedural, and substantive issues involving debt that we need to address at the convention. And if you want to derail the convention, you start looking at social welfare or the conservation or the pension plan. Whatever you think of those, if you're a smart, intelligent, prudent politician or delegate, you say, look, we got to get these things done and we don't want to derail them. I don't believe a convention held in New York, given the progressive character of most voters, if you look at their electoral behavior in the past 30 or 40 years, are going to go in there and say, oh boy, let's go after these things. I think it's a false issue. I legitimately think they have a concern here, but it's the kind of thing you say, that's off the table.
Okay. Gloria in Canandaigua is on the phone. Go ahead, Gloria.
Hi, I think this is a great program, so thank you.
Sure.
I have a question. I haven't heard the whole program, but how have you proposed, has anyone proposed, how you will educate the public? And if I could say the second question, concern, if I am extremely concerned about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I know that that's more of a federal kind of issue. However, how would it possibly affect state governments regulations? You know, and I hope to God it's never, ever passed. But those are both concerns of mine.
The TPP. Okay, Gloria, thank you for the phone call. Brian, do you think of the TPP as one that's impacting you, or would the specter of the TPP be in play at all?
No, I
haven't thought about it in that level.
No, Gloria is right. It's a federal issue. Mm-hmm. And now it impacts individual states. Of course it does. But that's why we have United States senators that are elected and congressional representatives that are elected to look out for New York State or any other state for that matter. So I really don't see that as being an issue that's going to blossom out of the convention. Do you really know for sure? Do you have it? But I would be willing to bet, Evan, that lunch that you would buy for all of us, that it won't happen.
Okay. Todd on Twitter says, I'm a fan of term limits, too. They're called elections. Okay, Brian Cole. Todd's calling us out here on term limits. He said, we already have them. Vote somebody else.
Well, on one hand, Todd's right. We do have elections, but the system is gamed. It's gamed to the majorities drawing their own legislative districts, which are non-competitive districts. The system is gamed from the standpoint that people could serve as long as they want to. And even though there are people that, you know, quite frankly, that once they've been there for a while, they shouldn't be there any longer because they're not bringing new ideas, or just sort of amassing individual power, etc. That's why I'm a state legislator with the term limits. The only thing you have to be careful about with term limits is making sure that the length of time is adequate to learn state government, to be part of state government, so it can't be really short. And the other piece is that you want to have them staggered, because you don't want the state bureaucracy now running state government. And that is one counter argument for term limits, is that bureaucrats would be, you know, outlasting the legislators that try to have a positive impact on the process.
Peter?
A short personal anecdote. I was out at California a few years back. They asked me to speak on, they were thinking about a convention in California, this massive program in Sacramento. And they asked me to speak, rather cruelly, I think, on the New York experience, what not to do. And I thought, so I want to go out there and give an answer to this, but let me tell you something. The term limit issue came up. There were a number of California legislators in there, bureaucrats, members of the executive branch, and What they said to me in response to my remarks is, look, we're not upset so much about term limits. What we're upset by is how short a time they give us. So I'm ambivalent about term limits, but if we were to do it, you need to make sure, for many of the reasons Brian mentioned, that we give these people enough time both to get their feet on the ground, to get some sense of what is going on, and be able to be effective legislators. What that term is, I don't know. That's something we need to debate. Is it 3 terms, 4 terms, 12 years, whatever?
And you're saying a constitutional convention would be the wonderful stage for that kind of a public discussion.
We have lots of data on this. We have experience of other states. They have term limits. We have lots of data to sit down and mull that issue over.
If you're just joining us, the next chance for a New York State constitutional convention, you will vote on it in November of 2017, so just about 2 years from now. And if that happened, then probably the spring of 2019 is when the Constitutional Convention would start. And we're exploring that process here. We rarely do it. We haven't done it for about 50 years. And if we don't do it this time, 2037 will be the next chance to do it. It would be a chance to change what is our Constitution and to address some of these major issues that that Peter Galli, a professor emeritus of political science at Canisius College, says have been sort of hanging and in the air here with I would say widespread, in many ways, widespread public support, whether it is term limits or other rules that might be amended. So this is your chance. And you can learn much more tonight. We're having this discussion because tonight our panelists are going to be out at Asbury First United Methodist Church in Rochester, 7 p.m., Asbury First United Methodist Church at 7 p.m. It's called Nuts, Bolts, and Monkey Wrenches of a New York State Constitutional Convention. The League of Women Voters Rochester Metro Area and the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester are hosting this event. And Judy Weinstein, is there anything that our listeners need to know about planning to attend tonight? Just be there?
Just come. And if they can't come, the forum will, in a few weeks, be posted on the League's YouTube website so that they can watch it.
Becky Elwell from the Interfaith Alliance, are you getting a preview of coming attractions this hour to what you'll have tonight?
Yes, and I'm thinking too that we think of it as an ongoing process. Mm-hmm. We've got the meeting tonight, and I see that we would try and develop something else so that people have, if they miss tonight, perhaps at another time they'll get more information.
Okay. Well, a couple more comments to share from our listeners. Tim in Pittsford writes about apathy. He says this is about voter apathy for sure. He writes, my little sister, who's 24, does not even know the governor's first name, and I consider her a pretty smart person, but her face is attached to her phone, paying attention to celebrity gossip, not politics. If you asked her what a constitutional convention was, Tim goes on to write, all you would see in return was a blank stare on her part. There's a reason why. Oh, boy, this is tough. He says, there's a reason why our generation is statistically the dumbest ever. Sorry, I always have to throw that shot in, but statistically it is true. Tim, that's your sister you're talking about. That's tough. But we hate on millennials a lot. And there are a lot of millennial listeners to this program. If you want to call and defend yourself, that's fine. But we'll see. That's part of what's going on tonight. That's part of what WXXI is going to be doing. Again, we're not taking a position, but Peter, it is about education and the process.
I'm going to suggest something. I mean, that's a very good point. So traditionally, we have used traditional media to do this. The organizations like the League, the newspapers, the print, television, special public interest shows. But the dynamic has changed radically, I think Brian made his point, since 1997. So it's social media. So the question is for me, is there some way that we could use social media, Facebook or whatever?
Brian Kolb's on social media.
I did it, but I mean, could we do that? I mean, we would reach a different audience. We'd reach the kind of audience generally that wouldn't think of watching a public interest show.
Yeah, I'd like to put two plugs in and this is not about Brian Kolb, but this is about two websites that currently exist for your listeners to go take a look at. And one of them is effectiveny.org. And then nyconstitution.org, which I think is two very good information vehicles. And this goes back to the work that I began with Bill Samuels, who heads up the new Roosevelt Foundation, a staunch Democrat. Jerry Benjamin, a professor from SUNY New Paltz, that we started an effort back in 2009. We held forums across the state, and we recognized then, as well as today, that it's an uphill climb to get information out, and information out to where voters really want to pay attention, and how is this going to affect my life? And it's like everything else, until we really get closer to 2017, even the media in general, except for today, is really been not asking a lot about it because they're looking at it, well, that's not current news. That's 2017.
Sure, yeah. And one quick question I wanted to follow up with. You heard the minority leader of the New York State Assembly, Brian Kolb, mention a possibility in terms of the issues that would be addressed at a constitutional convention, including, well, I think Peter and Brian have mentioned, a code of ethics, ethics reform. Now, it already feels like ancient history, but it was, what, January, February that we saw Sheldon Silver in handcuffs and the governor saying that this time we're serious about ethics reform. Brian, has it been serious enough for you?
Absolutely not.
No?
And certainly, as an aside, there's been additional legislation introduced, Public Officers Accountability Act. But quite frankly, one of the reasons why you have ongoing corruption in state government is that gathering of power. And certainly when you have one person making the decisions for an entire conference that is not a democracy, they amass power, and the rank and file, all of a sudden their voices are lost.
And you said that hasn't changed.
And that hasn't really changed. You've got a new speaker, you've got a new leader in the Senate, but they're still centralized figures. And even when we were in the budget negotiations, and I've been the legislative leader now 6 years, Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is a Democrat leader in the Senate, she has, I believe, 29 or 30 members of her conference, was not at the discussion table for her budget. Jeff Klein and his group, which is five legislators, are at the budget discussions. Brian Kolb, who represents 44 legislators, is not part of the discussion. So it's too limited, it's too closeted, it's mm-hmm. too secretive, mm-hmm. and it's not transparent, and that's the reason we get into some of the problems that we have.
We got about 20 seconds. Peter, you wanted to add to that?
Well, I'm looking at a list here in front of me of the number of politicians who behaved badly in the last 10 years or so, 35, from leadership right down. It's a startling figure for a legislature that at one time was voted by the National Conference of State Legislatures, the best professional legislator in the world. We all wanna change
the world. That's all right, Peter. That's okay. That's all right. We have to end with a little rock music for you. You know this music pretty well, don't you, Peter Geller?
The Beatles?
You know the Beatles, Jill, just absolutely.
Actually, I'm pre-Beatle. but I do know the Beatles. We all want to change the world, right?
Thank you, Peter. And we'll see if we change New York State. The vote 2017, and we're going to be talking plenty about that. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Brian Kolb. You can see them tonight. Judy Weinstein, Becky Elwell, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Have a good night tonight out at 7 p.m. out at it's Asbury, First United Methodist Church in Rochester. Have a great afternoon. This is Connections.